There are a lot of reasons to oppose the Israeli genocide. Number one, it's a genocide. That should be enough. But if you needed a selfish reason, let it be this. Whatever happens to Palestinians now will eventually happen to you. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Under Israeli colonialism, Palestine is a laboratory for the most dangerous research in the world, a testing ground in the search for the best answer to the question, how do you keep an oppressed population down? Before we get to the rest of the video, I just want to take a second to thank my one channel sponsor, Aura. We've been working with Aura over at First Thought for a while now, and it's been hands down the best sponsor experience I've ever had. Let me tell you about the service first, and then I'll give you my personal reason for working with these guys. You might remember that last year there was a massive data breach where hackers stole the social security numbers of just about every American. And not just social security numbers. Over 2.9 billion records were stolen from national public data. These stolen records include a person's full name, address, date of birth, phone number, and alternate names. Literally everything someone needs to steal your identity, or worse. If you've never been the victim of a data breach before, let me tell you, it's not fun. That stuff is scary, as well as being really intrusive. If you weren't taking precautions with your personal information online before, this should be a huge wake-up call. You've never been more vulnerable online than you are right now. I take this stuff seriously. I've got a 2-year-old daughter, and there are some freaks out there. Thankfully, I don't have to worry about it, because Aura protects me from this exact scenario. Aura alerts me if they find my phone number, email, or social security number on the dark web. They let me know immediately if anyone tries to use this information to access my credit or bank accounts. And for added peace of mind, they provide up to $5 million in identity theft insurance should the worst case scenario happen. They also have a bunch of other features to keep you and your kids safe online, all inside one app, so you don't need to go looking for a bunch of different services for your VPN, your antivirus, and your data security. You can use my link aura.com/secondthought to try 14 days for free. That's plenty of time for Aura to find out if any of your personal data has been exposed. I highly recommend you do this right now, because not only is national public data not going to do anything to help you, they probably aren't even going to face any repercussions for this leak. I'm not leaving myself and my family vulnerable to data breaches, and if you don't want to either, you can go to aura.com/secondthought to try Aura for 2 weeks absolutely free. And because I promised to give you my personal reason for working with Aura, besides it being a genuinely useful service that I use in my day-to-day life, when one of our First Thought videos got brigaded and we had to take the ad read down for optics reasons, the brand generously compensated us and doubled down on working with First Thought. They could have bailed, but they didn't. That's a cool company. So if you want to help support the channel and get some quality peace of mind while you're at it, give Aura a shot at the link below. All right, back to the video.
So one of the ideas about what the Palestine Laboratory means is that Israel has spent decades trialing, testing, refining huge amounts of surveillance tech, repressive tech, and weapons on Palestinians in Palestine.
This is Anthony Lowenstein, journalist and author of The Palestine Laboratory. And we sat down to talk to him about what that title means and how Israel is trying to find an answer to this question about how far you can go to suppress dissent.
This has been going on in various forms for all those decades. It obviously has accelerated this century with the advent of more sophisticated technology, and a lot of the surveillance that Palestinians experience in Palestine, all their phone calls are listened to, or at least there's the ability to do so. There's no way to have true privacy in Palestine. The entire telecommunication network is controlled by Israel. Social media posts are monitored the whole time. People often are arrested, Palestinians, for so-called pre-crime. They don't call it that, but that's essentially what it is, where person X writes a Facebook post. I'm not talking about, just to be clear, someone who threatens violence. That is a more murky area, I understand that. But if someone says something supportive of Palestinians, not calling for violence, not calling for the death of anyone. There's many examples of Israeli forces, police, military, arresting those individuals and putting them in prison. The whole concept of the laboratory really is that what happens in Palestine is not staying there. It's being exported globally. So a lot of the tools that we hear about in the West, Pegasus being a famous example, the phone, it's almost like a phone hacking tool, Paragon, Graphite. There are many others made by Israeli companies. What one needs to understand is that the majority of those companies are built, developed, and tested by individuals who have worked in the Israeli military persecuting Palestinians. Israeli companies are regularly selling this equipment, and they openly say it's been battle-tested in Palestine. Just since the war in Gaza, for example, in the last 14 or so months, you have Israel testing and trialing a range of new forms of surveillance tech, repressive tech, and weapons, deadly weapons.
This whole trend has a name. It's called the Imperial Boomerang Effect. But we'll get back to that in a second. What Anthony is talking about here is something that we literally just saw happen back in September of last year, when Homeland Security signed a $2 million contract with the Israeli tech company Paragon. Now, Paragon is a company best known for producing Graphite, a piece of spy software that can be used to secretly breach encrypted messaging apps like Telegram and Signal. This tech has been used against Palestinians. And if you remember Pegasus, the spyware created by another Israeli company called NSO, which compromised tens of thousands of phones back in 2021 and was actually banned by the US that same year, this is basically the same thing with a new coat of paint. These technologies can allow governments in the back door of apps used pretty extensively by activists and journalists. Famously, Palestinian human rights defenders were some of those targeted by Pegasus 4 years ago. And broadly speaking, hundreds of Palestinians have been arrested and questioned based on things like their posts on social media. And this DHS story is anything but exceptional. It's recent, but the truth is that the US has imported surveillance and policing techniques and technologies from Israel for years.
This happened very soon after 9/11. Many American police officers went to Israel and vice versa. They were essentially advising each other, training each other, finding ways that they could collaborate.
For example, in Baltimore, the camera network for the City Watch program is operated by the Israeli company Nice Systems. In Atlanta, the Video Integration Center, the Atlanta Police's surveillance system, was modeled on the Command and Control Center in the Old City of Jerusalem, and was created after the department visited Israel. And in New York, the famous Muslim surveillance program that launched after 9/11, which had undercover officers intrude in mosques, neighborhoods, businesses, and college campuses, collecting information on things like how many times Muslim students prayed and which restaurants had Al Jazeera playing on the TV. That was the product of the NYPD's tight relationship with Israeli police and the tactics developed to control and intimidate Palestinians. This is something called the Imperial Boomerang Effect. Now, you may have heard about it before, but in case you haven't, the boomerang effect is a term coined by Aimé Césaire in 1955, and the gist of it is this. Colonies don't exist in a separate world from the country that they are controlled by. For as much as colonies are under imperial domination, the effects of that control aren't neutral on colonizers. They can't just exist over there. Colonies are places where political power is, by nature, different. It's unequally exercised over populations that are both deemed and treated by colonizers as weaker and inferior to people from the imperial core. And that makes them places where the way power is wielded changes. It adapts and learns new means of expressing itself without restraint. It becomes more violent, more heavily imbued with prejudice, and with a lot less regard for human life. According to Césaire and other authors like Michel Foucault, the boomerang effect happens when these things that are learned from policing disenfranchised people abroad trains those with power in new ways to police disenfranchised people back home. Maybe this will make more sense with examples. Today, American police are fully militarized. At Standing Rock in 2016 and 17, for example, protesters against the North Dakota Access Pipeline were assaulted with tear gas and rubber bullets. The police rolled out military armored vehicles like Bearcats, Humvees, and MRAPs, originally built to withstand IED explosions in Iraq. Or take Ferguson in 2014, where BLM protests were quashed by cops wearing more armor than actual soldiers, carrying a variant of M4 rifles originally designed for the military, and gassing protesters with chemical weapons that would actually qualify as a war crime if they were used abroad. You can thank things like the DoD's 1033 program for that. It's a program that straight up takes extra stock from the military and hands it out to cops for free. It's why we have 10-foot armored vehicles just around. But the 1033 program is only about 35 years old, and our police forces have been doing some version of this for over a century. And that's thanks to the American Empire. The American Empire has always depended on its military. Not only to fight other empires, like the Spanish, and gain colonies like the Philippines, Guam, and Puerto Rico, but also to actually administer those colonies and keep colonial populations down by violently suppressing anti-colonial dissent and running counterinsurgency operations. Here on the mainland, the U.S. Army colonized and oppressed Native Americans, against whom they ran over 1,000 combat actions. And in the Philippines, it was the army, again, putting down the Philippine resistance to the empire by taking over 500,000 Filipino lives. And so the military developed pretty explicitly as a force for controlling colonial populations, people who were under American political control, but never considered part of the club. In contrast to that, you have the cops, at least in theory. If the history of the military is straightforward violence, cops came into existence in the UK and the US as an explicit alternative to that. The military was seen as too violent, tyrannical, and illegitimate for dealing with strikes and riots at home. And so the state came up with a watered-down, community-based alternative that wouldn't seem so bad. Cops. They didn't have military uniforms, guns, or training, and that was the point of having them around. To be something else. But that changed in the early 20th century. It's around this time that the US saw a sudden wave of immigrants from abroad, and at the same time, a lot of internal migration to big cities. Specifically, a lot of migration of people not considered white. In the early 1900s, race politics were shifting a little bit, and the Irish were slowly being folded into who counts as white. But the lines were still very sharp when it came to black and Asian people. And in urban centers, the elite responded to these new people who weren't part of their club with basically eugenics. For the urban upper and middle class, non-whites were, quote, unfit for self-government, threats to the social and moral order, the source of crime, disorder, and moral decay, and uniquely criminal and degenerate. Like the army in the colonies, American elites saw these populations as people in need of being civilized. And the police agreed. Police chiefs at this time also had insane prejudice against non-whites, calling minorities the lowest order of humanity, and claimed they were the main criminals in the US, responsible for rape, prostitution, and vice. In cities like Berkeley, California, police training began to include courses on racial types, and how things like heredity and race degeneration led to crime. But cops didn't quite know what to do about this. They were very good at being racist, but they lacked concrete solutions. To figure out how to deal with these people, they looked to the experts, the military. Several influential police chiefs, most famously this guy, came directly from the military and completely reorganized police departments into strict hierarchies, increasing their training to include military drills and giving them lethal weapons. Creating, in their words, an army of men with themselves at the head of the army. They also increased their surveillance toolkit, ripping colonial practices like fingerprinting, data collection, and what's called the Bertillon system to create the first police intelligence units. The police became much more violent, much more invasive, and they started using those things to criminalize minority groups. And now that they had these skills, they were also free to unleash them on others that the elite deemed dangerous. Like white working class people, striking for better wages and time off. To a man with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. To someone trained to think like a colonizer, with all the tools and techniques, the world is full of people to civilize, or at the very least, control. Police began to see the populations they were supposedly meant to protect as little more than mindless, dangerous livestock to be corralled and monitored. Human animals. And like we've already seen in Baltimore and Standing Rock, and basically every major protest since, this didn't stop in the early 1900s. Spyware, armored vehicles, guns, and tear gas have already made it back home. How long will it be until Lavender, the Israeli AI that automatically marks Palestinian doctors, journalists, pretty much anyone they don't like, does too. We're already seeing that play out in Gaza. It means more people being automatically bombed with their families with little more than 20 seconds of consideration from some IDF soldier. Israel has, for a long time, been one of many vassal states for the US, an unofficial extension of the empire. leading the way in new colonizing techniques trained on Palestinian subjects. But why does Israel matter?
Israel's a tiny country with a tiny population. People often wonder, why would so many nations want to go to a country which has got roughly 10 million people? America's got 340 million people. But because Israel has been occupying Palestine for so long, and I would argue what a lot of countries and police forces are going to in Israel is not just learning tactics, but the concept of getting away with it. So many nations, and I've heard this from many American police, really admire, if they're being honest, how Israel gets away with this. I mean, occupying Palestine for more than half a century.
Unlike previous colonialisms, the biggest export that the Israeli state has given the US is a case study in successful ethno-religious nationalism. Not just in the means, the methods, the techniques of policing, and the technology to do it, but in the way to use these things towards a specific end and come out on top.
And this is what I talk about a lot, that Israel is not just selling weapons and surveillance. It's obviously selling that too, but Israel is also selling a concept, a model of ethno-nationalism. This idea somehow that we as a Jewish state should have the right to have a nation which prioritizes one group over anybody else.
American capitalism has always required violence and domination. We live in profoundly unequal times, and the brunt of that suffering has always been placed on those the powerful can discriminate against. And the more they do, the more resistance there is to that oppression, and so the more violent their repression becomes. Nationalism and all the associated fear of immigrants and minority groups has come out as the solution for politicians to justify that renewed escalation of violence. It quarantines those who protest it as part of some other group that we shouldn't have to think about because they're not us and we need to look out for our own. Don't fall for it. Our own has always only meant the rich and powerful. If things start somewhere out there in the colonies, it's only a matter of time before the circle of undesirables includes you.